Hey, you Prime members, you can listen to Three Little Words ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
This podcast is brought to you by Quorn, the nation's favourite meat-free brand. Quorn is a great partner for this show because now, more than ever, we should all be thinking about the impact of the food that we eat. For every episode, Tony tells us a fact about Quorn.
I do, John, and I've repeatedly told you that it's a quat. You don't seem to be taking that on board. I'm gonna march on, though. Making Quorn mince uses 90% less land and water than making beef mince. That's great for the environment.
Yo, I haven't eaten meat for decades, and I remember when being a vegetarian or a vegan was pretty unusual. But now it's become much more mainstream because of the health and environmental benefits. So if cutting down on meat is something that you're looking to do, you'll find that Quorn's a great option.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Three Little Words. I'm here with Tony Pitts, and our guest today is someone who's been in the charts for over three decades, has sold over 40 million records, or 40 million albums, I think. It's probably more if you add the singles together. She's a wonderful performer, musician. See, the big thing is, this is a fan
moment. Welcome, Shirley Bassey.
No, this is a fan
moment. I wish it was Shirley Bassey.
No, this is a fan moment because we've become friends. But I was a fan before I was a friend, because we've been to see Texas a number of times.
It's never, it can never be right then, because you're all... Because
hang on, Tony, you talked over as I said, well, guess what, so let me just say that.
Oh, you have not said it yet, have you?
No, I have, then you were talking, so no one heard it.
I'm talking to Charlene anyway, go on, just do so it is.
So our guest today is Charlene Spiteri. Charlene, thank you for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
I'm absolutely exhausted.
I know, and I meant what I said, because
I'm having one of my turns.
Me and Manly have been to see it a few times before. We were lucky enough to get to know it and then could come without buying the tickets.
He's like, oh, stop phoning me. He like, get me to come to gigs. I'm like, do you want to come to a show, John?
I've got friends who I've started off admiring from a distance, and it's a very strange dynamic because you can't, that bit of you can't die. So do you still go to the gigs and listen to the music?
Yeah. I can separate the two up instantly. Because, you know, I've got people who I'm a massive fan of. But when I see them on stage, I literally is...
You're a fan again?
It's like I'm a fan again. Yeah. And then when I'm sitting talking to them,
you feel like ownership, though? Don't you feel like... So when I go and see my friend Richard Hawley, the honest truth is that I want to say to people as they're applauding, he's my friend.
There's I get very proud of my mates. Yes. Do you know what I mean? It's like for instance, when I've texted you the other month when you were doing the Wales, Little Blue and Little White, and I was like, oh my god, and it was just like, you know, I see him on television, doing his interviews, doing his stand up, doing all his thing, and I feel really, really proud. But it's that thing when you see something like that, because it was something else again, you're like, he's making a big difference in the world that we live in. Do you know what I mean? And then you're even more proud. Do you know what I mean? When you see someone, you know, doing something like that.
I think yours is a bit of a nobler thing you're expressing. I think mine's just petty showing off.
I
think that might just be he's my friend. I think it might just be that.
I mean, we'll come on to your words in a minute, but that is one thing that when someone's as successful as you've been, to maintain a career so long, you end up being relevant to different people at different times, but also in different places for different reasons. No, that's really a great thing to have on your life.
But what's interesting to me is that, because the idea to me of walking out on, as you two both do, you go out onto in front of a live audience and say, "Here I am." You're there to be, and you judge there and then, right? You immediately get there. That I think that would terrify me.
I don't think it terrifies you. I mean, I don't know if you feel the same, John, but just from what I've seen of you when you perform, well, I say perform, it's like, it's just you, isn't it? It's like, it isn't, for me, when you know, when I go on stage, it's just me. This is just what I do, but I just have to sing songs in between it. And the thing is that when we go on stage, for me and the people that we are like, in our everyday life, the important thing is not just us. It's not even us at all.
No.
It's about everything round about us.
Yes.
So when I walk on stage, the only moment that it's that one moment where it's about me or the band is just as we step on the stage, and that's when you get the first moment it comes back to you. But then it's about all of us in that one space, because...
But when you say all of us, you mean the you audience, and the audience.
Absolutely.
And
the audience are an integral part of the show.
Yeah.
But the terrifying bit, I've not got a show.
The terrifying bit, you're not performing, it's just you being you. That's where the fear is.
Really?
Because if you're acting, you're behind something else. There's a filter.
Yeah.
So you can be that, and so the possibility for humiliation is still there. You can still make an absolute twat of yourself when you're acting. Of course you can. So I think if you've got lines to learn, you're not dressed as you, you're dressed as somebody else, and I think that doesn't terrify me at all in any way. Whereas the idea of walking out and going, "Hello," that terrifies me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So listen, we need to move on to your first word. I don't know. What is your first word?
Gallus.
So the way, the way the show works, this is, I think we've done 22, 23 shows or something like that. I don't know.
Depends
but that's this. This is this, the second word that I've not come across.
You've not come across that word at all?
No. I mean, I know it's derivation and stuff, but I've never heard it in use. But then again, maybe this explains why. So quickly, the etymology, I'll do an etymology and definition. It means gallows. From the Middle English and Old English, galga, from the Germanic, galgon, which means a pole or a stake, a pole on which a condemned person was hung. And now there's an interesting bit, and the reason that I won't have been familiar with it. It's a colloquial term most often used in the west of Scotland and Glasgow especially, to describe an act of boldness, daring or recklessness. Someone who acts in a gallous manner is usually doing something that they shouldn't be. And then it also can refer to someone who does something in a stylish or exemplary manner. It has both negative and positive connotations depending on the way it is used. So, Charlene, why did you pick the word gallus?
It's funny because if you say it in Glasgow, if you refer it, you can refer to like, oh, they're just gallus, they're just cool, they're just like, they've just got it on, they don't care. You know what I mean? Nothing rouses them. They're just always like...
Yeah.
Super on it, and you're not going to stir this person at all in any way that's going to like take them off the path. And it's about delivery as well. The way somebody would deliver something, the way somebody would say something, like just like you wouldn't say something horrible to somebody, you wouldn't say something, but you would just say something in a way that could just change someone's path slightly, and that would be like they're just gallus because they're just super cool. But if you said, if you could go, "Oh, her, oh, she's a bit gallus, isn't she?" It means, like, if you were speaking about a girl or a woman, you go, "Oh, like my mum used to always go, like, oh, gallus Alice down the road." And she was a bit like Shirley MacLaine in, I'm trying to think, what the one with Frank Sinatra where she was the green tights. She's a bit like,
yeah,
a bit
chewing gum.
Yeah,
reckless.
Gum a bit like, yeah. Ooh, yeah. You know, she's a bit like that. She's a bit,
as you were talking, I realised exactly why it would have those meanings, because it's from gallows, so gallows humour. So, I think it's
the person that's about to be hung who leaves a little bon mot just before they die, who says, well, fucking go fuck yourself.
That is a person that Gallus would say, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, go fuck yourself. So it's in that sense.
What they would be like.
And then I think in the sense you just described the girl, that would be somebody that's heading towards a gallows, I think, because they've got a recklessness about them.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to work out how it could have both those meanings coming from that term. And it's one's about the kind of behaviour that says you're going towards a gallows, and then the other one is those cull fuckers who are up there having a little cheroot before the that's what it is, right?
Yeah, but it's funny because it's just a word that I've always...
It's something you'd want to be and not be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You'd want to be in a Gallus band, but for me, I'd want to be in a Gallus band. I wouldn't want to be known as a Gallus woman. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
is that why you picked it? Because it reminds you of home, or is what you felt when you
it's
joined
the
band?
It's got a warmth. Yeah, it's got... I mean, do you know what it is? The reason that I picked it was because in so much of who I am is because I'm from Glasgow, and my sort of attitude towards what I do, and how I've dealt, you know, like people say to somebody, oh yeah, but they, you know, they were successful really young, and you know, that's why they're about a twat. And it's like, no, it's because they're a twat. It's not because they became... I'm like, how can you become successful and then become a twat when you've got the world at your feet? And you've got everything that you ever dreamt of, and you do a job that you love, that, you know, there's not a lot of us get to do something that we love to do. So, no, they were just always a twat to me. So, and that is, so much of that is from my growing up in Glasgow.
On that point, though, when you, as Gallus is a word, because it's a very interesting thing with you and your career in Texas, you have always been at the front on all the album covers, but you've never been sexualized. You've never been... You're the female front of a band.
Yeah.
There's not many. And there's also not many who seem to have told the record label how they're going to dress and how they're going to look. Is that fair to say? Because that 100%, seems to have Gallus about
it. Yeah, I've never been a shrink violer when it comes to my opinion. But I think that's got a lot to do with being really badly bullied at school. That when all that was over and in my youth, that it wasn't that I turned into an animal, but literally if I see someone in a meeting or even someone in a shop and someone's giving them a hard time about something, I'll be like, I can't, like, but then my husband, he'll like, what do you always need to get involved for? You can't help yourself, can you? I'm like, let me just, I have to, because I literally like feel like I can feel it all coming back to me. It's like, it's like creeping up my skin. I can feel the feeling that I felt is that 14-year-old just going, oh God, they're going to get me.
Why were you getting bullied?
I was just bullied because, you know, growing up in Glasgow, my name was Charlene Eugenie Spiteri. You know, and my parents had moved out to Loch Lomond at this point, so I wasn't being bullied when I lived in Glasgow. So we moved out to Loch Lomond and I went to secondary school there. And I looked different from everybody. I had a different name. I had really dark hair and, you know, I was like, I was so sort of wee, skinny, ugly thing. I was like, I looked like a wee elf, weird, like, gremlin-y thing. And I was really into art and I was really into music and I was proper geeky, but I don't know anybody that's in a band that was not a geek.
That's right.
Because you think they're not, but you actually look at it historically and go, just lines of geeks in bands.
Yes.
And they became musicians because they didn't fit in. It's like, I saw a stand-up one time and it was really funny. He says, look, anybody that's ever achieved anything in their lives was bullied.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element at some point in their life they've been bullied, mm-hmm. because that's when they had to either fight to get out or get back, whatever. And I was like, yeah, it is quite strange. It's a really, again, another really important part of who I am and what I've achieved. So for me, like, because, you know, people would go, like, you're going, you're on the front of the album sleeves, you're doing this, you're doing that, and I'm not doing tits and arse. It's just not in my nature. But the weird thing is for me is when I do a photograph with Jürgen Teller and it's just my eyes with my jumper pulled up, for me, I'm looking at that going, oh, that's it, that's gallus. See what
gallus,
I mean?
That's what
that
I mean.
That is
that's
gallus. That is sexy. That is gallus. But, and it's, that's all, what it
but
is.
It's give you a status because of that, because I know like people have gone, wow, that's a strong woman who's not compliant. You know, we're bearing in mind here, we're talking over the last 30 years. We're talking, you know, late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, where the landscape was different.
It was very
different. Tits and arses going to sell? And so to go, no, I'm going to pull my jumper up and you'll get a picture in my eyes. That's the fucking album cover.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, because that could easily go by unnoted, because there will be people, there'll be kids listening to this, I'm sure. That otherness, that thing that you're punished for, that shit that's in you, you can turn to gold. I think that having people like you in the landscape saying that out loud is powerful.
You know, it is important for people to know that everybody's got a fight somewhere.
Yeah.
There's always, there's it doesn't matter what it is or where you come from or what you do, but there is always that element in your life when you're grown up that it's kind of like, it's like playing run around in it.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, what lane am I going in? Where am I? You know, and there is that point, and when you're a teenager in your childhood, and you do it in different, there's almost like that 7-year cycle that you do it in certain points of your life where you have that sort of shake up again, you have to choose what direction
you know you're at
a
crossroads, right?
You're like, right, I'm at a crossroads again, where do I go? And you know, because people say, well, how come you guys have been so successful for 30 years, for over 30 years now? And I'm like, because we rode the bad times, and it's, if you can ride the bad times, trust me, you will be, it's like being rehearsed, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you know it really, really well, you can move around within it to a certain point, and you get a bit of leeway in that thing that you do, and that's kind of like what life is like.
But I got one question that's very specific before we move on to your second word, and it may even be an impossible question to answer, because obviously you talked about, you know, moving to Loch Lomond and then being an outsider and being bullied because of it, and it seems like it was pretty bad for it to still be part of who you are now. But there would have been a point shortly after where you would have been on stage and some of those people will be in the audience.
Was
there ever a stage where you think, right, I've shown you bastards, or is it still something that you
Nah, I never ever thought I showed the bullies. But there was one really funny moment, maybe about 5 years ago, and we were playing the Hydro in Glasgow, and you know, it's a big show, and it was sold out beyond. Do you know what I mean? There was like literally, they were going, it's heaving, but we're a Glasgow band, and you know, it was absolutely, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. And you know what it's like when you play your hometown, there's that. There's those moments where the lump comes into your throat. It's like, because they're your people, and you're like, especially when they're giving you so much back. And I remember coming off stage, going on for the encore, and I remember standing, and I don't know where it came from, and I went to all those aunties that freaking went and made a cup of tea when I used to go up and sing 10 guitars, because I had a cousin that used to go up and sing I Once Had a Dear Old Mother, that, you know, about a mother that dies and goes to heaven and looks down on her daughter every night, and all the aunties would be going, oh my gosh, she's great, and I'd be like standing in the doorway, because I was 3 years younger than Carolyn, and I'd be like, right, I'm going to sing, it's my turn to sing, and then I'd go up and I'd go, I had a band, I'd be like, off I'd go, and literally be like, do you want a tea, Jean? And they fuck
the
up and piss off and leave me. And I remember I got on that stage and I said, to all those aunties that pissed off when I was, and you all wanted the guest list tonight, fucking get it up, you. And it was in the frigging Scottish papers the next day. I don't know what came over me. I literally was so vitriolic about it. I was like, get up.
That's deep. It's deep. Like, that came from deep.
It was literally like, yeah. I thought, oh my God, I'm so scarred.
Yes.
What is
that's
wrong?
Come from right down there, right?
It was, oh, I mean, it was guttural. It was like, literally, like,
visceral.
Get up.
That is really
beautiful.
Oh my God, I was like,
well,
was,
I love your face, mate, because it ended up with telling your aunties to fuck off.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
So that was a brilliant first word, Charlie. What's your second word?
Massive word. Love.
The biggest Perfect. Word, I think. Probably the most powerful word I know. Okay, so it's from the old English word lufu, which means a feeling of love, romance, sexual attraction, affection, friendliness, or the love of God, from a proto-Germanic word lubo, which is part of liebe. Definition. So it's defined by the Cambridge Dictionary as to like another adult very much and be romantically and sexually attracted to them, or to have strong feelings of liking for a friend or a person in your family. I think that's a bit of a limited...
Yeah.
The fact that it's a limited definition suggests how massive the word is.
Yeah, because you can't really put words to it.
You can't. Because that, and I think that's always the case. I think words like yes as well are hugely difficult to be precise because they are so all-encompassing. So that's a definition. We've got three quotes. So I'll start off with Nietzsche, who said, there is always some madness in love, but there is also always some reason in madness, which I'd agree with. Secondly, find what you love and let it kill you. And that's Bukowski. And then from my favourite poet, of all time, favourite, Philip Larkin in An Arundel Tomb, which is a fucking beautiful poem. What will survive of us is love. And I believe that to the core of my being. So why did you pick the word love?
Because it's just, it's everything. It's everything that I need. It's everything that I think that everybody needs. And I think probably even more so now, and like what we've gone through with this pandemic and everything, is that it's interesting to see a younger generation that don't even know that that's what it is, be so accepting of others and, you know, in their sexuality, in their colour, in everything. And I really noticed that these younger generations now seem to have... They don't have the baggage that generations before us had of, I guess, hate, but what they believed they loved. There's people that have done unbelievably amazing things, you know, looking after their neighbours, looking after the people that are, you know, their own community and everything.
Yeah.
And community is so important, you know, as someone that did grow up, I mean... You're for Sheffield, you're for Liverpool. It's like community is unbelievably important in the people that we've become and our attitudes and what we do and what we share. You know, because it's about sharing, isn't it? Love is about sharing. It's about sharing yourself. It's about sharing a feeling and an emotion and it's everything. So, you know, love really has just always been something that I've been lucky enough to have in my home life with my mum and dad. And just to see, also having that love as a parent as well, to look and to love what I do. I just feel so fortunate and so lucky to love what I do. And yeah, I just think it's a word sometimes that we play with a lot. Because, you know, if when you're young, you're trying to get somebody to say they love you because you think that that's what's going to be seal the deal sort of thing. But then you get to that point where you realise that it's not about saying it, it's about knowing it. And
yes,
you know
that's,
it.
That's,
you know yes. it within your,
yes.
you know, like you can feel it like oozing in and out through your pores and you could feel it from that other person. And yeah, I think maybe this whole restart that we're maybe going to have with what's happened with the pandemic is that I'm just hoping that maybe we're all a little bit more open with our love and with our feelings towards others and our helpfulness and just being neighbourly.
Yes.
You know, being neighbourly,
yes.
and saying hello to the person in the shop. How nice does it make you feel when you go like somebody, morning?
Yeah.
Hello.
From what you, when you were talking then, it struck me like a sledgehammer. What's happened is the prevailing narrative has been doom and gloom and despair, and that febrile nature it takes on where everybody's that every conversation you hear is about the pandemic, the whole. But what happens is when something's so one way, you start to notice in amongst that prevailing narrative of doom and gloom, you see 1,000 tiny acts of love every day.
Even just the thing of the fact that we're having to have, you know, social distancing, and you're going into shops, you're going into, you know, the fruit and veg shop, for instance, and someone goes in to get something. And it's just that moment of just stopping for 2 seconds and just standing back and go, no, on you go.
Yeah.
You know, no, you get yours, I'll get mine. Just that sudden thing of just, because we're not rushing or we're not, yeah, it's just like, slow it right down and just be nice. Yeah, my mum always says, be nice. It doesn't cost anything, be nice. And you're like, okay. Then if they give you a hard time, then get laid in.
but it's interesting, coming back from what you were saying before about, you know, having that horrible experience of being bullied, then all of a sudden being adored, being on stage and being, you know, the front of a very successful band. And to come down to what you seem to be saying with love is not...
It's not about me.
It's not admiration.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a shared thing. It's a blanket.
It's like that feeling when you're at a gig and that moment where you're all just singing along together at the top of your voice.
That's what I mean.
It's like that bubble is love.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because you're all sharing that moment.
That's what I'm taking from it. I'm not taking from it that you're talking about, you know,
I need to be loved. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
you
don't
and
need
Bryn
to,
and, you know, I love this Welsh chef. And it's not that. It's not a personal pride.
No, exactly. That's
what
it.
What you all seem to be saying, which I think is the most beautiful thing about what you're saying, is that this is everyone's, but not everyone can see it.
And all exactly.
Until it's too late, usually. Yeah. That's the thing.
But I think what you're saying to us, too late, but it's this bit, like, you know, it's not this deep love we've known each other for years. It's like, you can love the man in the shop, you can love being in the shop, you can love being in this community.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a lot to do it. We've just been too fucking busy most of our lives.
It's a choice. It's a choice. It's what
and
it is.
Yeah, it is a choice to open your eyes up and see it.
It's a choice.
It's open yourself up to feel it as well. You know.
I love what you said as well about the younger generation, because I've learned a lot from my own kids in their ability to say, I love you.
Yeah.
And it's led to me, you know, as a man in my 50s, with my mates just going, yeah, I love you, pal. I'm going, fucking hell, I barely said that to my dad. Yeah.
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I haven't had that skill set. I barely said it to them growing up because I thought all you had to do was show it, not say it.
Yeah.
And that, it's a very, very simple word, but it carries so much. And sometimes what it carries isn't telling them something that they know, it's reaffirming what they're living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And
that is exactly it.
And our parents didn't have much use for emotional intelligence. My generation, my parents didn't have much.
Yeah, I mean, my parents weren't, my mum would.
But you know,
but
if you ring at 3 o'clock in the morning.
But my dad would never be like, love you. But now it's like with the grandchildren, because they're all like, love you, grandpa, love you. And they'll, again, young generation coming in and using the word. It's like, you know, that love. My dog can't tell me it loves me. But Jesus, Dan, my dog loves me. Yeah. And God, I love my dog. Do you know what I mean? I look at that. That wee thing comes and sits on my lap and she'll like snuggle in and I'm just like, my heart, literally, there's like a feeling of like,
yeah.
And everything's all right,
yeah.
And that's love, and that is it. It's like that important. You know, sometimes when you like get that nice big breath in that you get when you go, It goes down deep into your body and it goes down to your toes and the ends of your fingers and you go, oh, I felt that one. That was good. Right, I feel all right now.
It's a vibration.
It's like that, yeah.
So it feel, love feels like a, like it's a vibration.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Definitely, right. Definitely.
Well, on some occasions it is.
Hey!
Leave with a gag about vibrations.
There you go. We start, yeah. We start talking honestly and emotionally, so it needs punctuating.
Oh, of course, but you always got to have a bit of gag.
No, but no, seriously, I get what you're saying. I really,
fantastic.
Really get
brave
what you're saying.
As well
it's
to
a
pick
lovely,
it. Amazing.
It's a lovely use of that word. Yeah. Lovely use for
it. It's a great word though, isn't it?
Well, but
it looks, it even looks great. It's a great word to look at.
I remember seeing in Philadelphia City Centre.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
It was a monument to John F. Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just L-O-V-E. And it's been replicated various times.
Loads of
places. But I remember the first time I saw it, mid-80s, and I was like, fuck, you know, what a brilliant, simple thing to stand in the middle of a place that people walk past every day.
Yeah.
And that's, again, even saying that, it's like it is a simple word. It's a very simple word, and it's a simple word to say, but it means everything.
Yeah.
And it's a feeling that is everything. To me, I'm just like, this is the most extraordinary word.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those words that every time you look at it, it could be something different.
The measure of the word, I think, is that it's both the most simple, pure word you can... literally, I think, the most simple word that you can think of, and possibly also the most complex.
Mm.
You know? I think it's not tangible, it's not a physical... I can say there's a table. Love shouldn't, in our understanding of the world, exist.
Because you can't
quantify it,
but you can show somebody it as well.
Right.
But it's weird, it's like you can show them it, but you can't see it.
Yeah.
It's like a riddle.
It is a body riddle, because sometimes when you try to figure it out, you're a bit like, oh, I don't
that's
know.
What I'm saying. So it's both those, and that's why it is such work. But that's I'm so glad you brought it to us, because it's a fabulous word, isn't it? So your third word that you brought to us today is.
My third and final word is rhythm.
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 From Latin, rhythmus, meaning movement in time, from which comes from Greek, rhythmos, measured flow, which is interesting. Definitions, there are many. I've picked a strong pattern of sounds, words or musical notes that are used in music, poetry and dancing, even though there are many other versions. And then I've got three quotes, all of them. Beautiful, I think. First one is from Plato. Musical training is a more potent instrument than any other because rhythm and harmony find their way into the inward places of the soul. Followed by Edgar Allan Poe, who said, I would define, in brief, the poetry of words as the rhythmical creation of beauty. And then finally, and my favourite one on the subject of rhythm, is Maya Angelou, who said, everything in the universe has a rhythm. Everything dances.
Yeah.
So why did you pick the word rhythm?
It's funny because I've never heard that quote, and I love Maya Angelou, but Yeah, that is why, because everything that we do and everything that we say and everything that we feel has a rhythm. And life is a rhythm, and the rhythm is stopped right now. The rhythm that we were on has changed, and it probably really needed changed. I mean, I can't wait to see when we come out of this pandemic what it's going to be like. I think it's going to be quite different. I think people are going to be quite different, and in a good sense, not in a bad sense. So I think the rhythm of life is going to change, and the rhythm of how we communicate is going to change.
So when you say that the world's changed, you're also referring before to how much you've changed. You know, you're happy in the garden, you're happy where you are, you're happy with the friends you've got. Do you see yourself going back to what you were doing before and embracing it easily, or is it like a comfortable old
sweater? Well, it's funny because it's like, you know, I'm really lucky that I can be in Wales, don't see anybody, digging a hole, Doug's lying beside me, and I'm just like, today I'm going to do that, or I'll paint something, like a shed, or I've decided to build things. I mean, the amount of stuff that I've made over the lockdown, seriously. My sister, at Christmas, I made cushions, right? These massive big bolster cushions. And then I went mental because I made one because my mum died just before the first lockdown, as you know. Mm. I guess it's such a thing of, like, you know, where you come from as well. My mum was like this. She's lying in the hospital. She's got lung cancer. Literally, we only found out, like, and she was dead 2 weeks later. We didn't even know. She was literally... And she's in the hospital, but as soon as they'd got her onto, like, you know, the painkillers and everything, she came back to her fiery self. You know, it was just amazing to see my mum. My dad walked into and we was all tears and everything, and she went, shut up. She went, this is not about you, this is about me this time. And I remember my sister and I going... like this, like laughing, mum's back. And but she was sitting there and she went like this. She see all that fabric, there's that fabric in the cupboard, and you know, like when your mum's telling you something exactly where it is, yes, go into the thing and go up to the right and you find it on the top shelf. And she went on about this fabric. She went, there's some she went, there's some bits in there that you don't need to keep, but there's some really good stuff and I don't want you to waste that. So there was loads of it, and I don't want any of it to go to waste. So my sister and I took a load of it to, we gave, my sister's friend was doing loads of PPE, so we gave her loads of fabric and she made PPE with it, right? And then there was other stuff that was left that is fabric that I had seen as a kid. I'd seen this in my mum's sewing boxes. Like,
same fabric.
Yeah, like, but stuff that we had, like she'd have kept it from, because she was always a dressmaker.
Yeah. Wow.
She was a dressmaker and she was a window dresser. She worked for Richard Shops as a window dresser, and she was always collecting, because she was display artist, and she always had bits. And we would, my sister and I used to love going through those boxes and boxes of buttons and everything, and find all these unusual buttons and bits of fabric and stuff. And there was loads of fabric that I hadn't seen in years, and I was literally like, oh my God. And I was like to my sister, do you remember this bit? And my sister was like, oh yeah. And I was like, mum made me a boiler suit in that one time when I was going to the primary 7 quali dance. And I'll never forget, my mum made me this boiler suit and she sewed an embassy regal patch on it. I don't even know why. It was like a patch, and it said, and I think it was like from when they do the racing on the cars. Because you remember loads of...
They used to sponsor them.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I thought it looked a bit like
bit racing.
Boy racing.
Yeah.
I mean, can you sew that to my boiler suit?
10 number 6 tip.
And I had NBC Regal, like, on... And I'm thinking, and I go, Jesus, was I on crack? What was I doing as a child? Stick that NBC Regal thing on my primary 7 quali dance. But... So there was fabric, there was things left over, things that my mum dresses that my mum had made us and stuff. It was just amazing to see all this fabric. And so I had loads of it, and I took it. I had, when we emptied my mum's house, I took it all to Wales. So I was in Wales going, and then I thought, oh, I'm going to make a big bolster cushion for that seat in the kitchen. And I made it, and I got all this lovely binding and everything. I had loads of stuff that mum would give me as well, and I made it, and my sister saw it, because I'd went like that. Look what I'd... Yeah, I was dead proud of myself. I went, wait, see what I've made, FaceTimed, and I was like... And she went, oh, I love that. Can you make me one of them for Christmas? So then I made her one for Christmas. Then my niece saw it, her daughter, and my niece has just got her own flat, and she's 31, and she was like, Aunt Charlene, can you make me one? So then I started making all these bloody cushions, and I was loving it. I mean, honest to God, if you'd seen me, because I had to buy loads of stuffing and wadding and all this, and I was literally like, I came down one night, I was like covered in it. I went, what are you doing up there? I was like, I'm in my sewing room. Because now I've got a sewing room, you see. So, yeah. So things like...
But you're going to have to transition from that.
Yeah, back to the other rhythm.
But that is my life. I've always loved those things, but I've just never had the time to do them. Because I'd be away on tour, or I'd be doing this, I'd be doing that. Because the truth is what I'm doing right now is what I did as a child. My granda had an allotment across the road for the house and over at the bowling green. And we used to sit in there and, like, I mean, it was great, you know, we'd grow stuff and you'd take it back and your granny would be like, I just used to love, you know, like, getting the peas and then you'd just be, like, crunching on the skins, like, smell and just, like, you know, I've spoke about it before that I think a lot of the reason that I became a songwriter was because of those moments in my granda's allotment, because there used to be a bus stop across the road, and my cousin Mark was songwriter and the singer in the band Gun, and the two of us, three cousins that grew up together. My sister and I grew up together, my cousin Mark, and two of us out of the three become musicians. Successful musicians. Yes. You're a bit like, that's, you know. But we used to sit in my granda, like, right, and you'd get sandwiches out and cut them up. We'd sit. And we'd look at the bus stop and you'd go, right, what's their story? And my granda would give it to her. And you had to tell the story about the person, where they're going, where they've been, or why they're carrying that bag, or they're dressed this way. And you had to look at every little element of the person, and then you had to come up with a story. And that was this game that my granda played with us. And I think for me, like, I love cooking. And whenever we do mixes of records, so when we got to listen back to the mixes, I don't go and sit and listen to the record. I put the record on and then I go and cook.
Yeah.
And I hear it through a couple of rooms and then I'm like, that hi-hat's doing my nothing. Get rid of that. Yeah. Or who the fuck played that tambourine?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, stupid stuff. And I'm very anal about drums. So rhythmically, it's really important for me that I can breathe to the song, because if someone's drumming or the shot, or it's like, I remember saying to someone one time, and I never knew them at the time, and they were coming and they were doing some percussion and they played some tambourine something, and I was trying to describe to them, because I wasn't at the studio, I was in London, I was stuck in London, I was doing promo and they were putting something on the record in Glasgow, and they came on the phone and I says, look, listen, so can you do it more? And they were like, and I says, seriously, okay, I'm going to put it in layman's language. I was like, do you play with your cock like that? No, don't fucking play my tambourine like that. So do you see what I'm saying?
I've had that in reverse.
But do you know what I'm saying? It was like, so when you hear a record, you want it to move. It's got to move in the right way. He's like, I'll stop this now. But that was, so the rhythm needs to be, it's not like, I was like, fucking hell, mate. And that was why I was so excited to come in today to talk to you, because I knew that the conversation could go anywhere. And that's what's so interesting about your podcast as well, because it does, like, when I've listened to, just having that time to listen to somebody in full and for them to get a rhythm.
Yeah.
Within the podcast, do you know what I mean? Because sometimes it's like so cut and dried when someone's interviewed. It's like, so you get a new record, da da da.
Yes,
thank you, you were wonderful, goodbye. And that is the way TV is, and we understand that, or that's the way radio is, and that's it. But a podcast gives you that breath, because I mean, I've always said that I think that's what makes a hit record.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation. and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Is that if you can, because the truth is I don't know how to write a hit record because I don't know what it is that it is, you know, when I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, but
we've written a few hit records and you go, and I always think it's when, I've got two ways of explaining it, is if you can breathe to it properly and if you can point when you're singing it. It's like, yeah. Well, you can say what you want. Yeah, exactly. You're like that. She has a hair. Like, it's like, if you can point to it, and I don't consciously go, can
I'm going to be looking now. I'm going to be looking.
But I don't, when Johnny and I write, I don't start pointing. But then I go, when we finish it, I go, can point to this song. And he goes, oh, don't you start with your pointing shit again. And I'm like, well,
it's a great way to define it.
Yeah.
Point to it, I'm good.
Wrote a successful
We've got
film.
A chance. 50-50 chance if you can point.
Well, you've got three words that we could point to. It's your brilliant, gallus, love and rhythm. What would be the word that you'd be glad never to hear again?
Liar.
So when you say liar, do you mean the word liar or do you mean people who tell lies?
Liars and the word liar. I just, everything about, and my mum used to say to me when I was a kid, you can catch a thief but you'll never catch a liar. I've never forgot that.
I think that's a great thing because the world now allows anyone to be anything that they want to be in terms of presenting something that's not the truth. You know, the fake news is a new phenomenon because it's based on the acceptance of lies as fact.
Absolutely.
But also, there's a facade that can be created now that never used to be created because you would trip up.
Yourself,
Yeah, and that's it. You would trip up, and now you can. I mean, you literally can get away with so much.
Yeah, as if the tripping up doesn't work if you're not bothered.
Yeah.
I had a liar when I was a kid, when I first started. I was a truck mechanic called Cyril, and he was magnificent. He was a van driver. He'd say, I've just pulled... he'd tell me in the Second World War that Churchill rang him and said, he said, where are you, Cyril? He said, in Sheffield. He said, I'm a taxi sent for you. We've got a job for you. And the job was for him to get out to sea. They knew the torpedo was going to be fired at this ship. And Churchill knew that Cyril had the ability to jump on the torpedo and hold it under
Shut
the boat.
Up.
I think no, you're lying.
No, no,
I'm telling listen, trust me, that was the level of lying. But he was... So all the lads in this truck garage that I worked at in Sheffield cornered him.
Uh-huh.
You lying bastard. Stop telling your lies. And he'd be like, lads, I'm telling you. So it was that thing of being caught out had gone. And I thought, the freedom of that.
Yeah, and that thing, like when a liar tells you something, that sometimes they tell you something that they tell you in such detail and it's such a story that you think it must be true. And if you don't have the ability to lie like that.
Yes.
It's like if you don't have that ability, then you can't comprehend that someone could possibly make that up.
The more detail,
I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
I mean, I can put, my sister says, I can put arms on legs on everything.
Yeah.
But an out-and-out lie is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. You've got to have a good memory to be a liar. Yeah, you've got to have a very, very
good
memory.
Like that thing, it's like that thing when they do that SAS thing, innit? When they do, because I get obsessed with that as well.
When they
get them in the camp, and they say, listen, when you're getting brought in for questioning, when they take you in the middle of the night and they've dragged you out of a cell or something, mm-hmm. what you're going to tell them, base it on truth.
Truth.
So if you base it on truth, you're not going to get caught.
Yeah.
Because basically, you know, like when you're not trying to disclose a place or something, base it on something that you absolutely know, and then...
Yes, then you're safe.
Yeah,
And good liars also tend to be very bright and perceptive and sometimes empathetic even, because they can see what you want to hear, they can see what you need to hear, they can make the adjustments. And just as a rule of thumb, if somebody's telling you something and it's intensely detailed, that's usually a lie.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that again, watching too much television. I saw that on the police thing. I said to my husband the other night, I said, do you not think, though, these programs that are up but questioning people and everything because they're saying, well, when suddenly when they give you too much detail, yeah. somebody that's telling the truth will just be like, I don't know, I wasn't there, and they'll stop. Whereas somebody will go, well, I was there and they were with me and blah, blah, and then you know.
And I remember that because I was in the core team.
Yeah, and I remember all that. And I'm a bit like, surely somebody that's going to come out of crime, all these people are going to come out, they're going to be watching this and they're just going to have loads of info on how to be like question. I was getting quite irate about it. And he was like,
but he sat there going, this is why I've not watched telly for 30 years.
He did say to me, this is why I go to work. This is why I'm in a kitchen just cooking food and never coming home, because I can't be watching this TV with you. Because you talk to it.
Listen, Charlene, it's been lovely to have you on.
Lovely to meet you, Charlene. Fantastic.
And Lia is a great one to end on. And I don't have to say anything. We'll love you.
Oh, I love you too, mate. You know I do.
Let's wrap it up in love. You've got all the gallants in the world. Well,
so that's one of those, isn't it? That's Charlene's your friend, and like you said, she's been around for 3 decades, so she's been large in my landscape, and she's exactly what I thought she would be, which is, I think, probably the nicest thing. She's authentic. She's clearly paid for her success in the important ways, and she's engaging and honest, and what you see is what you get. And that's, you wouldn't know that she'd sold 40 million records if you didn't know she'd sold 40 million records, which I think is a real tribute to her.
Yeah, she's just a great person to spend time with. I hope that you enjoyed that episode of Three Little Words as much as we did. I absolutely love doing this show with Tony, and the guests have been brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, leave us a review, recommend us to any of your friends. And it just remains for me to say also thank you to our sponsor, Quorn.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this, perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.